Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Hello and good April the 6th to you. James Sharman here alongside Sportsnet.ca's chief football writer, John Molinaro, which has been a real busy week in the football world. Midweek action in the Premier League, which means the run-in's upon us, right? About 8-9 games left, J-Mo.
Yeah.
It's upon us, right?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, although, let's be honest, the title race might well be over at this point. 7 points. Don't tell Spurs that just yet. Stranger things have happened, but it's not going to happen.
You don't think so?
I don't think so, no. We'll get to the full Premier League story later in today's show. There are still some races, I think, worth following at the bottom of the table and obviously for the top four. But we're going to start today in another league, which has been pretty much sewn up already, the German Bundesliga. We're joined by Joshua Kloeg, feature writer at The Athletic for the Leafs and TFC. I would love to spend the entire podcast, Joshua, talking about Leafs with you. Trust me, I really would. Tonight could be the night they finally clinch. Please.
It could. I'm actually at the ACC right now. There's definitely a sense of anticipation in and around the building. But to be frank, I'd rather talk Bayern. So I'm if I'm being completely honest, yeah.
You are, of course, a huge Bayern Munich fan. You follow the Bundesliga extremely closely. This weekend is Der Klassiker. Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. Always a huge match. But this season, given the standings of Bayern Munich, 15 points up on Leipzig in second place, and Dortmund, they're, I think, 10 points clear off fifth, so they're going to be in the Champions League. It doesn't quite have the same luster, perhaps, of previous years, fair to say?
Well, I mean, I think given what happened at the last time in Dortmund, where Dortmund were successful and they handed Bayern one of their only two losses this season, I think there's always a sense that Bayern want to bring it, when they come back to the Allianz. But yeah, look, it's always at this point in the season, April, May, where Bayern really start to separate themselves from the pack. This season, I will say what's a bit different is that Dortmund being in fourth now, you obviously a lot of people are going to talk about how the Bundesliga is a one-team league, and perhaps that's valid in a lot of ways, but given that Dortmund is fourth, I think this is the kind of match where Dortmund really wants to get up for it and prove that they're still, able to punch their weight with the big boys. Because I mean, Hoffenheim and Leipzig have surprised, I would say, almost everybody. So for Dortmund, I think there's still something at play here, and obviously Bayern fans always want to walk away from this match, reminding the Bundesliga that they are the best and they're almost untouchable in a way, right?
What do you think maybe it's not a fair question, Josh, but what has been the issue with Dortmund this year? Is it more a case of just Hoffenheim and Leipzig doing so well that they've kind of fallen down a little bit, or is it a combination of that and just issues at Dortmund?
I think Dortmund have done a fairly good job, but I think that the real thing with Dortmund is that they haven't been able to bring it against the big boys. I was looking into it. They're 1-1-2. In their last four games against Bundesliga teams that are currently in a European position. There's still a team that's dangerous in a lot of ways, but if you're not able to go toe-to-toe with some of the bigger teams in the league, then that's what's really going to be your downfall. But look, I think they still have designs on being successful in Europe, and you see that with Bayern as well. We've seen that all season where, Bayern have played their best in Europe, and in the Bundesliga, they've looked, at best okay, given the talent that they have and given the depth that they have. So I think it might just be a matter of with both of these teams looking at the Bundesliga and maybe saying, we'll do fine, we'll get into Europe, but we really want to focus our efforts on the Champions League, right?
Yeah, and of course, and a huge one coming up next week against Real Madrid for Bayern Munich, Dortmund taking on Monaco. Carlo Ancelotti, of course, replaces Pep Guardiola. It was a slow start, some stumbles along the way, but they're going to win another Bundesliga championship. And obviously, like you mentioned there, it's all about the Champions League. But have the fans fully accepted Ancelotti? Because there were some concerns earlier in the season.
The expectation in Munich is that Carlo would deliver perfection, because that's what, people in Munich, and that's what Bayern fans around the world have become used to. And under Pep, we saw this really thorough, comprehensive style of football where, you know, nothing less than perfection was accepted, and it was dominant, it was clinical. And Carlo came in, and he was very much the type of manager that looked at his lineup and he said, okay, this is about as talented a lineup as you'll find in Europe. I'm going to let these players play, and I'm not going to meddle too much in tactics and what have you. So I think from a player's perspective, I think it's been welcomed, but I think you have a lot of concern because Bayern are in that weird spot where they're really trying to topple the Reals and the Barcelonas of the world and prove that they might be the biggest club in Europe. So to have a manager who kind of has a little more of a lax approach, I think that's bothered a lot of people. Personally, I will say that I like it. I think the Bundesliga needs a little bit of that drama because, I mean, in Pep's first season, I think they clinched something ridiculous like in March or April. So you need a little bit of drama, and I think if you allow players, you know, you just allow them the responsibility to make their own decisions, perhaps on the pitch, I think that instills a lot more confidence in players because we know that there were players like Frank Ribery who he said he wasn't as happy playing under Pep because it was so controlled. So yeah, and the other thing about Carlo is he's still very much playing some of the veterans on the team. And again, personally speaking, I've taken issue with that because your Riveries, your Robins, your Alonzos, your Lams, they're not going to be here for a very long time. And I think we need to see a little more Kimmich and Sanchez. And that's the one thing that I think has frustrated a lot of Bayern fans is because we haven't seen this youth. And the youth are there. And you can't keep them for so long but before they're going to want to maybe seek greener pastures elsewhere and just see the pitch more, right?
What, talking to Joshua Cloak of The Athletic here on Soccer Central Podcast, Josh, what do we read, if anything, into Bayern's 1-0 loss to Hoffenheim this past week going into this one?
Well, I mean, I looked at that match and I said, okay, there's a little more youth in the squad. This is good. And so maybe what we read into it is that he still in April has not figured out his best 11. And to me, that's an issue because this is the time of the year where you need to have that sorted out. Perhaps what we should read into it as well is this is a Hoffenheim team that deserves to have more people talking about it. Let's not forget that they've drawn 12 matches this season. They've only lost twice. Bayern's only lost twice as well. This is a team that what, 8, 9, 10 years ago, they were in the second division, and a year before that, they were in a regional division. You know, their ascent to the top of the Bundesliga has been really remarkable. So I looked at that game and said it's less about Bayern, you know, playing poorly and more about Hoffenheim playing really well. Midweek matches have never been Bayern's strong suit this season, so I think they have a tough April ahead, as a lot of teams do, and they're thinking about, you know, they were thinking about the week ahead with their Clásico, and then, you know, you've got to go to Madrid. So yeah, to me, it's about Hoffenheim, and it's a team that we should all be kind of looking at because right now they're in a pretty healthy spot to be in the Champions League for the first time ever next season, and for me that'll be pretty exciting to watch.
For sure, and I mean with Hoffenheim's arrival on the scene. With Dortmund not potentially losing a top player to Bayern Munich this summer, with Leipzig's ambition being what it is, do you foresee a tighter race in the near future in the Bundesliga? Will Bayern be challenged more so in the upcoming years?
You know, I would really like to believe that they would, but I just don't know. I just don't foresee that happening. What I do see happening is management at Bayern is definitely trying to build much more of a, you know, an FC Deutschland. They're trying to bring in more players, and we saw that with Rudi and Schule, and we can expect, you know, Joshua Kimmich to take on a bigger role next year. So if that's the plan for them to really focus on having a German squad, you know, then that allows other teams to say, well, okay, that's what you're doing. That's your plan. Why don't we try and bring in more internationals? Then perhaps we could see, you know, the race become a little tighter. Dortmund have always done an incredible job at finding young players across Europe that and across the world that that seemingly no other club could find. So perhaps in a few years when those players start to mature, we could see the race become tighter. But it's, as a Bayern fan, it is sometimes tough for me to swallow the fact that, yeah, this can be a one-team league. And though we might see upstarts from time to time, there's just, I just don't know. If Bayern keep doing well in Europe, then they're going to attract players that know that, you know, Bayern offer them a chance to win the Champions League. So I would like to say yes, but I don't know about that.
You mentioned there briefly before about Dortmund and, their ability to unearth, young prospects and play them. One such player is Christian Pulisic, the American teenager. What's been your take on him this year? Because he's, fair to say he's enjoyed a bit of a breakout campaign.
Well, I mean, he's benefited. I watch Bundesliga matches quite often, and when they're played often on American networks, you often have a Pulisic cam that just follows
right.
him, and that's interesting because it's been a long time since there has been a player from the United States that has just become, I guess, the next hope in a lot of ways. It's interesting. I should mention I was talking to Jozy Altidore about him last week in training, right when they got back from the international break. And what Jozy mentioned to me that was really interesting, he said that Christian plays with a real chip on his shoulder. And for such a young player, that's not always the case. So that's what I like, too, is that it's not just the talent, because that speaks for itself, but just how he's handled, the pressure and the spotlight of being the next, big American soccer player. So to hear Jozy say that, it's reassuring that he will follow through, because you always look at players of his age and say, okay, but what next? I mean, we talk a lot about Freddie Adu and what happened there. So again, to hear that he plays with a lot of confidence, and to hear that because he puts out a very kind of humble, I don't want to call it a front, but in interviews, he seems very humble. And to me, to see him, or to know that he plays with that kind of edge, I think that's really reassuring.
And certainly having a top American on a top European team, of course, and being a top player on that team,
right.
He's really in uncharted territory. There's been good Americans around European leagues for a number of years, but never that stud, that star player. And yes,
it was close. I mean, we look at Julian Green. He looked for a while like he might have been able to crack into Bayern's first squad, and he got some matches during their friendly tour over the summer in the States, but it just never happened. It's tough. I think it's tough with a lot of big teams, but we know that what Dortmund can offer young players is the opportunity to develop at an almost accelerated pace, and I think we know that Dortmund won't be his last stop. I think we all have some ideas about where he's going to go next. But yeah, to see him develop, it's especially ahead of the World Cup next year. It's exciting, and if it sheds more of a positive light on the Bundesliga and the opportunities that are there, then again, that's good for the league.
Joshua, before you leave us, I must ask you about the book you authored, Escape is at Hand, Tales of a Boy and a Band. As a big hip fan myself, tell us about that. I need to read this, right?
You do need to read it. I'll get a copy in your hands. Look, this I wrote that book a few years back. I basically took a few years off of my life as a younger man to follow the hip around the world, through the States, throughout Canada, throughout Europe. And the book itself is just it's a how-to in terms of how to fall in love with a band. And we all have bands that, and artists and musicians that we kind of fall in love with and introduce, us to music. But for me, it was about how to completely immerse yourself in this band, and also how to, understand the world around you through this band. I mean, you're a fan. You know that this band is kind of an education in a way, because their songs are they kind of speak another language. They introduce people to places and events that we might not have known about. So for me, it was a way to kind of learn about the world through this band. And it's such an incredible history with the band. And obviously, after everything that happened last summer, they kind of took on a different weight. But yeah, it's what was great as well is after everything that happened this summer, I had the chance to speak to a number of bands that they'd opened with, really big, you know, Canadian bands now, like Joel Plaskett and Winter Sleep and the Arkells. These are bands that the Hip took out on tour with them and kind of showed them the ropes. And so, you know, I was able to speak to all of these bands and figure out what the Hip gave them and how they kind of passed the torch, if you will. So I released a second edition of the book this just before their final tour, and includes a lot of great stuff from those bands as well. So I'll get a copy to you, and I encourage everyone else that, you know, has any, you know, interest in the Hip to check it out as well.
Thanks, Josh. That's great. Yeah, I moved here in 1990, and the Hip really taught me to be Canadian. And that's, I'm not joking, that's very much those early years in this country. Saw him a number of times, and they're just fantastic. Joshua, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. We'll get you back on the show really soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, boys.
Cheers, Josh.
That is Joshua Cloak of The Athletic, feature writer. Follow Joshua on Twitter at Joshua Cloak. That's K-L-O-K-E. Interesting. And yeah, this Dortmund team, some would say it's been a disappointing campaign, but it's been them and Bayern for so many years. It's nice to see. I know people in Germany hate Leipzig. Right. Like this pantomime villain, but it's been good for the league, hasn't it?
I think so. It's kind of introduced a little bit of variety and intrigue to the league. Hoffenheim, too, because they've been challenging, right? They sit third in the table, and they beat Bayern on the midweek on Tuesday. So, yeah, I think it's great for the league.
It frustrates me, the hatred towards Leipzig, though. I know they're a big corporate entity, and they're created by this big company, but every club comes from somewhere,
right?
And there's some pretty big clubs in Germany that came from big corporate systems, right?
Yeah.
Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich,
yeah,
go on, right?
Right.
So just get over it.
Yeah, it's not like Bayern Munich or some mom and pop kind of like, you know, organization.
They're not Leicester.
Yeah, well, yeah, well, but they've got money behind them too. I mean, I don't quite understand it, but it is what it is, I guess.
And yeah, listen, we need villains, don't we, in sport now?
Sure.
And again, makes it more interesting, I suppose.
Right.
But Bayern Munich are also seen as a big villain as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Amongst, they are. A lot of fans for buying championships and buying championships from Borussia Dortmund often, because if you look at the talent that has gone from Dortmund to Bayern Munich, even most recently with Mats Hummels.
Right.
Happens. It seems to happen every year, some huge players.
Yeah. Not too many go the other way.
No, they're not. It's almost as if, you know, Bayern don't need an academy.
Right.
Because they have Dortmund.
Right.
Doing
they just kind of pillage and take whoever they want eventually, yeah.
And don't forget, check out Sportsnet World schedule for all your Bundesliga needs throughout the season. Let's switch now to the Premier League, shall we? I want to get to this story about Antonio Conte, though. Antonio Conte obviously done a wonderful job at Chelsea this year. I think they're going to be crowned champions. There's rumours from the Italian media that Inter Milan are hot and heavy for Antonio Conte. The suggestion is that his family isn't with him in London right now. They want him to go back there. Mm. And he would consider that. I think it's nonsense myself. What do you think, Jamo?
Yeah, I think so too. I don't think first of all, I can't see him going back. I mean, going back to Italy, maybe eventually, but, you know, he just kind of moved to Chelsea and he made such a big deal about wanting to experience, you know, another league. He's going to lead Chelsea to the Premier League title, or so we think. You know, next year promises Champions League football, which will really allow him to test his managerial sort of mettle. So I don't think he's going anywhere. If he were to go back to Italy, I certainly don't think it's Inter Milan. I mean, that's kind of a circus right now. He's, you know, very much was a Juventus player and, you know, a Juventus manager. So, I mean, who knows if Massimiliano Allegri moves on to Arsenal and that position opens up, then maybe goes back to Juventus. But I really can't see him leaving Chelsea, and certainly not for Inter Milan.
Yeah, for those that don't know Italian football, Juve and Inter Milan are hated rivals. That would be a little bit like an Arsenal manager going to Spurs or vice versa.
Which has happened. It has happened.
Listen, nothing is out of the realm of possibility. And Inter Milan have got some ambitious new owners from China, but it is a gong show. I mean, Frank de Boer was there for how long?
Oh.
A few weeks.
A few weeks, yeah.
Right, never really given a chance.
Right. I just don't see it at this juncture. I mean, there's nothing. He's got such a great situation at Chelsea. I'm not sure what would be.
Only family pressure, right? That is only, but that could be sorted out.
Yeah, I'm sure it could.
I mean, London's a pretty decent place to live if you're rich.
Yeah, although, you know, Italians pretty chauvinistic about stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
We like certain things about, you know.
You can find it in London.
Sure.
Aside from the weather, you can find it in London.
Yeah. Well, the weather's a big thing, right?
It is, actually. It's enough to drive me out of Canada, that's for sure.
Right, there you go.
Chelsea, though, were awfully impressive, weren't they, against Man City?
Yeah.
Yesterday, 2-1 winners. Again, a tactical shift at halftime. Kurt Zouma back in the 11, which is nice to see. He's been out for a long time. Started off, and Azpilicueta was up as a wing back with Victor Moses injured.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't really work out that well in the first half, but on comes Matic for Zouma in the second half, and suddenly they lock it down.
Right.
And that's what they've been doing recently. Aside from the loss of Crystal Palace, they're not blowing teams away, but they lock it down.
Yeah, yeah, they were, you know, they kind of close out games, right? I mean, that's what they do under Conte. So it was, I think, a statement win too, right? I mean, especially coming after the Palace loss. You know, there was all the suggestion about, well, the title race has opened up again, and Spurs are hot and heavy on their trail. So, you know, I think they needed this one just to sort of remind everyone, saying, hey, yeah, we may have tripped up against Palace, but... it's still our titles to lose.
I think you can forgive a little bit of complacency.
Sure.
A team that's been ahead by so many points for so long now.
Oh, of course.
Season, that hiccup against Palace. And it might be a good thing. And, you know, you see that sometimes. I know the Bayern Munich players are saying that loss to Hoffenheim was a good thing before the Clásico.
Sure.
Because it wakes them up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what? We can't take our foot off the gas. You know, we could, lose out some points here. Some pretty good teams in the league.
And yeah.
Man City, again, it's been 3 years, right, since Man City won the championship. Seems a long time.
Yeah, I know. It seems longer, doesn't it?
Right?
Yeah.
I think Pep will turn it around, but there's going to be a clear-out, I think. We discussed that on the show yesterday. Yesterday or Tuesday, we discussed that. What you expect from Man City this summer. They've got some good young talent there. We understand that. But there's a lot of players there you think have seen the last few games, City players.
Right. I wonder if Aguero stays on.
I think he's gone.
I would think he'd be gone, too.
Because he just doesn't seem that Pep type of player.
No.
Wonderful. And, I mean, listen, if you're Arsenal...
Oh,
my God, is he what you need or what?
I think you move heaven and earth to go get him.
So maybe if you lose Sanchez, which is looking quite possible, maybe you appease the fans by throwing a lot of money at Man City and getting Aguero.
Yeah.
If he wants to go there.
Yeah, that's a big thing too, right?
You've got to convince him to come.
Because who knows if, and the other thing is, who knows if they're going to be in Champions League next year? Would he go to a team that's not playing in, you know, in Europa League? Who knows?
That top four race is getting pretty exciting right now.
Yeah, very tight.
I mean, give Spurs second place, just to give it to them. Third and fourth, City, obviously Liverpool in there just, who blew it again yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah.
Against Bournemouth. Crazy stats around this team and how they've struggled against the lesser teams this season. What's the one I saw that against City, Chelsea, Arsenal and United, they've conceded 5 goals this season. Against Bournemouth, they've now conceded 6. Make sense of that to me.
I can't. I don't know.
It's just ludicrous.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, I think part of it might be leadership. You look at the team yesterday on that field. Who's leading that team? I think it means a lot. Late in games, you need... I'm old school in that regard. I think you need that presence in there. A Jamie Carragher type of player, name any leader in football, to say, listen, guys, we have this at 2-1.
Right.
But they can see that goal again. And, you know... Lucas, he's the most veteran player. He's not a leader, I don't think.
Not in the sort of vocal kind of way. I wouldn't say so, no.
You know, Wijnaldum, not a leader, I don't think.
I don't know who it is on that.
It's Jordan Henderson, and he's in the stands hurt.
Yeah.
And is he even a leader? Some people question his credentials as captain.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest that he is.
So, some issues for Liverpool. Arsenal, you finally won. Beat West Ham, who are in this tailspin right now, but... All is well at Arsenal, finally, eh?
Well, I wouldn't say that. Beating teams in the relegation zone or fighting for to stay alive. Yeah, I suspect that they should be able to beat a team like
West Ham. Yeah, but there was a protest march planned before the game yesterday.
No.
And 10 people showed up for it, so they cancelled it.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah. It's getting a bit crazy, isn't it? You're seeing all these Wenger out banners everywhere?
There was even one at WrestleMania, apparently.
Was there really?
Yeah.
A Wenger out?
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
That was pretty funny.
Wasn't by... the British Bulldog, was it?
No, he's not. No, I don't think he's a wrestler anymore. But
he might be dead.
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah,
David Boy Smith died.
Yeah, he is. He did.
Like I say, it probably wasn't him.
Yeah,
then.
So definitely.
Even less likely.
Yeah, even less likely. No, but there was a sign in that. And yeah, it's just kind of becoming a trending thing on social media.
Bad news, Barrett. Is he still wrestling?
I have no idea.
He's a Man City fan, though. He was on the show 2 years ago.
I thought he was
a
Preston North End guy.
I think he he was, because he knew Danny Dicchio from right. Preston, but I think he
was Man City his Premier League team.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I believe so.
Okay, I don't remember.
I wasn't working that day. It was Jerry Dubson.
Yeah, Jerry was in, yeah. Craig were on that show. I remember that. It was fun.
So I'm not sure if he's wrestling still. Maybe it was him.
I don't know, yeah.
Just trying to find any British wrestlers I know, and there aren't many. Giant Haystacks, Big Daddy, right. back in the day. Back to the midweek action in the Premier League. The champions, Leicester, they win again 2-0 over Sunderland. 5 straight wins. You're tired, J-Mo. You're yawning.
Sorry, yeah.
it's okay, I'm tired too.
Yeah.
A little bit hungover as well.
No, a big win for Leicester. I mean, they've really kind of turned it on since
Craig Shakespeare.
Yeah, since Craig Shakespeare.
Some people
took
call
over
him Craig Snakespeare.
They call him Craig Snakespeare?
Mm-hmm, why? I think he was the reason why Ranieri was booted. He was working behind the scenes.
I don't know. I don't know
there.
About that.
Who cares? Right now, they won 5 straight games.
Yeah, that's huge
Should
for them.
Happy.
And they advanced to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So it's massive. So, you know, and Vardy obviously scoring goals again with the switches that Shakespeare has made. So it's good on them.
Still think it's the worst possible matchup in the Champions League against Atletico Madrid for them. I really think that's the case.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough, very tough nut to crack.
They're not going
to
go at them.
Yeah.
Atletico sit back as well.
Yeah.
But I think they would rather, as mentioned on Monday's podcast, they'd probably rather play Barcelona than Atletico.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
From a tactical standpoint?
I don't know, though. Like, if Barcelona gets up 1-2, I don't see, like, Leicester being able to claw their way back.
No.
And I just think, you know, Barcelona would smell blood in the water and then they'd totally expose them at the back. Probably. So
could be that way with
I think with Atletico, the thing is, you know, they're not going to score 5 goals, right? So they'll always, I think, you got to think that Leicester will always kind of be in the tie because it'll always be close.
No, but
who knows? Yeah, just breaking them down would be the issue.
Yeah, you're right. United drew Everton 1-1. An added time Ibrahimovic penalty. Sparing the blushes there to a certain point. 12 draws in the season for United.
Crazy,
I still think they're really close to being a really good team.
Yeah.
Don't you think? You get half those draws, they're in the top 4 conversation, more so than they are now.
Yeah, that's what separates like a top 4 team and not top 4 team is kind of converting those ties into draws, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of those draws into wins and closing games out. They haven't been able to do it. And you know, the game against Everton the other day was a classic example.
We're going to get into this, I think, on the show this weekend. But you look at LVG's United in his first 30 games, whatever, he has more points just than Jose Mourinho. So on paper, at least, you'd suggest that LVG's United was better than Jose Mourinho's United. But the eyeball test, it doesn't pass. To me, Jose's United is still a far superior team to Van Gaal's.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree.
Despite the points?
Yeah, I would agree. I think they look more of as a cohesive unit under Mourinho than they did under Van Gaal.
There's kind of a growing sentiment too that, and with respect to Ibrahimovic, who's been fantastic in his first season, they're almost going to be better off without him when he leaves because they're so dependent on him playing that style of football.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they can get a Griezmann in there, which is the hot rumor.
Yeah.
They'd be better served. More pace, because if Ibra, for all his, you know, brilliance, he's not going to beat you with pace or move the ball quickly.
No, and Griezmann will, but does Griezmann come if there's no potential Champions League football?
Again,
I don't think so.
Money.
And he's done quite well at Atletico too, right? And he's played really kind of blossomed under, I'm having a brain fart today. I think it would really take something to lure him away from Atletico.
Yeah, you're probably right there. But yeah, I'm not concerned about Jose Mourinho at United. I think he's going to turn it around and they'll be just fine. I saw Jesse Lingard has just signed a new contract, £100,000 a week.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Nothing against him. He's a decent enough player. But when Jesse Lingard's making $100,000, there's something so wrong with the game.
Yeah, well.
And you wonder why these kids are spoiled. What's he accomplished? Got a couple of England caps. Hasn't done very much. $100,000.
Yeah, that's a lot of money for a player of his caliber, I would say.
But when 2-goal man Wayne Rooney's making 300.
Yeah, that's true. That kind of puts it in perspective, right?
Spurs, full of young players playing brilliantly, beat Swansea 3-1, down 1-0 at the death, and they come back and score 3 goals. Man, they are fast becoming my favorite team to watch, man. As much as I'm a Liverpool fan, I love Spurs and I hate them in equal measure. God, they're going to be better and better and better with every passing year. They're so young and so dynamic. And doing this without Harry Kane.
Yeah, they're pretty entertaining to watch. I still, maybe I'm naive, but I still hold out hope that they can overturn Chelsea for the title. Because it's 7 points with eight games left, something like that. So it's certainly doable. And like Chelsea has a tough schedule because they got to play Bournemouth, who are coming off the win against Liverpool. They got to go to Old Trafford. Mm-hmm. And I think the next two or three Tottenham games are pretty winnable. Like they're playing, you know, teams down at the bottom half of the table. So interested to see if they can kind of close the gap even further and really tighten the screws on Antonio Conte's men.
Wasn't it when City won the championship for the first time, I think 6 games left, they're 8 points back.
Oh, yeah. They came from behind. Yeah. Really quite, behind, yeah. Right? Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's doable. I just look at Chelsea and there's no fragility there with Chelsea, which is why, you know, I know they've got some tough games coming up, but I don't see them going and losing to United. You know, they know exactly what they are. And they're so cohesive and tactically, I mean, I'm not sure there's anyone better right now in the league than Conte. So that's right. The reason why I think, as much as obviously mathematically it's still open, I think that the possibility of them losing that 7-point lead is pretty small. It's diminishing by the week.
Yeah, I think, you know, they're obviously the odds-on favorite, and I think it's their title to lose at this point. But, you know, I hold out hope that Tottenham can push them to the end.
But watch out for Spurs next year. They improve once again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Interested to see what kind of moves they make in the offseason. What, you know, additions they bring in, or do they kind of stick with what they have?
Any
or
depth moves, right? I mean,
I think so, yeah.
Obviously, a replacement for Kane when he's hurt. Janssen hasn't done it, although he played pretty well yesterday when he came on. Son's pretty decent, though, I have to say. Yeah, they can always improve, always find a way, right?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, what's happening on the site, by the way, coming up this weekend? The
Huge? Yeah, just the usual premiere, previewing the Premier League weekend. TFC is going to be playing at home at Atlanta on Saturday, so we'll have a preview of that, and yeah, a whole bunch of great stuff.
All right, as far as the TV coverage, we have Stoke Liverpool on Saturday, we have Bournemouth against Chelsea on Saturday as well, and then Sunday it's Manchester United against Sunderland and Everton playing someone, which I forget right
I'm
now.
I'm drawing a blank. I don't know.
Anyway, that's the late one. On Sunday, check out sportsnet.ca for the schedule. Thanks, JMO.
Yeah, thank you.
That was fun. Our thanks to Eric Prime behind the glass. Our thanks to Joshua Cloak, our Bundesliga expert, and our local tragically hip knowledge base.
There you go. I didn't know that.
I'm actually looking forward to reading that book. It'd be fantastic. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that. We may or may not be back on Monday. Don't know yet. We'll let you know. Bye.